Real Estate Money and More Podcast, Episode 1.
You finally found it. Welcome to the show that helps thousands with real estate, money, and a whole lot more. Now here is our host, Shane Willis.
Well, hello, and welcome to Real Estate Money and a Whole Lot More. My name's Shane Willis, and this is the podcast for investors and entrepreneurs to get ideas and tips that can help them succeed financially and in life. It is my sincere hope that we can be a small part in helping you get to the next level. Okay, so I'm very excited about starting this journey on podcasting. I wanted to give out a shout at the beginning of the show for someone who probably doesn't even know I exist. It would be Cliff Ravenscroft over at podcastanswerman.com. Cliff, I wanted to say thank you. I have actually been addicted for the past month to a lot of your information about podcasting. You've put out some great information on how to set it up, what to do, and I've taken all of that to heart. So thank you for all that information and just, well, thanks. I wanted to take this episode and kind of talk about why we're starting a podcast, and also go over some details of an upcoming book that I have coming out with Brian Tracy. It's called Transform. It'll be out this probably late summer, early fall 2014. I'm actually going to talk about one of the chapters I've written in that book already. We're in the editing stage right now, so I can't go, you know, word for word, but I can give you the gist of what the story is. It's really about me and how I view real estate right now as your investment vehicle of choice for, well, pretty much anything. We'll get into that later. but I get asked the question, you know, why podcast? Well, listening to some of Cliff's stuff over at Podcast Answer Man, he made sense a lot with what he was doing. I seen that he was answering some basic questions and then some very detailed questions, but it was stuff that he referred back to. I would listen to one episode and he would talk about, if you go back 122 episodes on my site and you listen, I answered that question specifically. Or if you go back two episodes, or he's up to, I think, 350 or 360 episodes right now as we're recording this. So he talks about, if you go back and listen to this episode, I covered that. Well, that really struck a bell with me, because a lot of times in my business, when I'm traveling, when I'm speaking, or when I'm dealing with clients, I'll get asked a lot of the same questions over and over again. I know that's not just me that does that. I know a lot of entrepreneurs, once you're good at your craft, people are going to come ask and there's some of the same questions. I get asked on a weekly basis, what's the process for buying a home? What's the process for buying an investment property? How do you analyze an investment property against a stock, a bond, a mutual fund? How do I analyze the two, because it's two different asset classes? So how do I compare them to figure out which one is a better investment? Now, that last one was a little more in depth than some of the regular questions I get. What's the process of buying a home? Where do I need to start? Well, that made sense to me to start this podcast, because if I'm getting asked these same questions over and over again, I know that these same questions are being asked multiple times for multiple people every day. So if I can help provide some of those answers, then maybe I can help people get a better understanding of the real estate process and the real estate investing process. And you might want to take that tip just as a general business tip. If you could ask the same questions or very similar questions over and over and over again, perhaps you ought to look into, well, go to podcastanswerman.com. He's got a bunch of stuff out there that talks about how to do these, and you can start answering some of the same questions over and over again. You can refer people to the site. So that's really where I want to take this podcast and the multiple episodes. We're going to discuss every aspect of real estate. I'm going to dive into the aspect of being a seller and what you should do. And I'm going to talk about what we should do as a buyer and how you can negotiate. What are your strong negotiation points? There's really only two aspects to any negotiation, and that's price and terms. But how do you set yourself up as either the buyer or the seller to be more successful in that negotiation? And that'll be a different episode. But we'll talk about the different aspects. Who all touches a real estate transaction? From your inspectors to your appraisers to your loan officers to your underwriters to your title commitment. There's a lot of people involved. There's a lot of moving parts. So we're going to dive into each one of those. I'll get some guests on the show that can discuss their expertise in these areas. I have some expertise in them, but I would rather bring on a full expert in that area that works just in, say, title, so we can go through what you should do with it. We're going to talk about financial services and how you can compare real estate to your other portfolio assets. So if I'm comparing a Pepsi stock with its great paying dividends to a real estate investment, which one makes better sense? And that's a question. If you could sit there and compare the two, well, now you can make a more informed decision. So there's aspects that we're going to look at. We're also going to dive into the mindset of a real estate investor and an investor in general, whether it be business, paper assets, or real estate assets. You need to have a certain mindset. The book that I have coming out with Brian Tracy in the fall, it's called Transform. And Brian and I and Nick Nanton down at DN Agency, it's Emmy Award-winning Nick Nanton, all wrote part of the book. And there's a few other people that wrote parts of the book. But it's really about a mindset. You have to transform your mindset in order to succeed. There's a lot of people that have a scarcity mindset out there that believe I have to hoard my cash, I have to hoard my capital because there's not enough of it out there. I'm here to tell you there are plenty of real estate investment deals. There are plenty of business deals, good ones. Now, there's some bad ones out there, and you need to be able to manage risk, which will be another show. But there is an abundance of deals and ways to make money that you do not need to have a scarcity mentality. And we'll talk about that in another episode. So I know some people are wondering what my background is, what gives me the right to discuss all this, where did I gain this knowledge from? So I wanted to use this episode some for kind of my thought process, a little bit about me so you guys can kind of learn me better, and what I think, which one thing I think is real estate really is a foundation to anything you want. If you're wanting a business that's even outside of real estate, I think learning real estate, actively investing in real estate can give you that. And I bring that up in the book that it's my thought process. If you want to run another business, it normally takes years to see a business profitable. Well, if you can have a strong real estate portfolio that's paying your bills, you don't have to take the check, and you can give the business the income and the freedom it needs to grow. You're also going to learn a ton about business just from building your real estate portfolio, but we'll get into that in a little bit. To give you a little background on me, I hold a master's in business with a marketing specialty. I've been in the real estate world on one side of the table or the other since the late 80s. 89 is actually when I started helping my folks sell HUD foreclosures. And to this day, I'm still helping people buy HUD foreclosures. So I've been in the real estate world for one or two or however many years that is. After high school, before college, I actually served in the service. I served 4.5 years in the United States Army. Seen some interesting places. Korea was the first year of my marriage. My wife and I spent the year over in South Korea, which I think very well could be a good thing for newlyweds to go on the other side of the world and no in-laws can tell you what to do. We couldn't even understand the words that were over the house we lived in. So we had to figure it out on our own. So when we come back here to the States, it was at least a strong foundation. When the Army asked me to re-enlist, at the end of my Korea tour, I had told them that they had sent me to the middle of Missouri, and they had sent me to South Korea. And what part of I'm from Florida did you not understand the first time around? Because I don't do snow. They said, if you give us a few more years, we'll send you to Hawaii. I took them up on that one. So we went to Hawaii. That's where our first child was born. My son was born in Hawaii. He loves the fact that he gets to tell people he's Hawaiian because he's got blonde hair and light eyes. So that doesn't really look Hawaiian at all. But he likes saying it. In Hawaii, met a good mentor of mine. He still lives there now. Runs a financial services firm on the islands and has taught me quite a bit about financial services. Got me really involved in the financial services world while I was continuing my service with the military. We went from Hawaii back to Florida, and I continued on going to college now and also working in the financial services arena. So I learned quite a bit about mortgages. I learned quite a bit about insurance. I learned quite a bit about investments. Held a license to market all of those, and really took that time as almost as valuable, if not more valuable, than my master's degree. Just because of what I learned. It was real life. So got out of college, finished up with the master's, and it was about 2003 when that happened. And I was looking more into the mortgages arena, and I had a friend of mine that had gotten into the mortgage arena. Now, if you know anything about when the market was really hot, it was at that time. So I learned a little more about mortgages and decided, you know what, I'm going to go be a loan officer. I'm going to be a mortgage, one of those mortgage broker type people. So I did. I worked for a mortgage company here in town for about 8 months, and the entrepreneur in me doesn't like working for anybody. So it took me 8 months to figure out that I knew everything, and I went out on my own. I opened my own mortgage company. I got the license. 2 weeks after I opened my mortgage company, the owner of the mortgage company I used to work for passed away. It was sudden and unexpected, but he passed away. And so at the funeral, I was approached by every loan officer that worked there wanting to know if they could come work for me. So the board of the old company asked if I would be interested in not purchasing the company, because the company had some debt, but purchasing some of the assets like the building, the phone numbers, and all the employees would just simply switch over, which I did. It was a growth for growth's sake. I don't know that I was ready for that type of growth. Well, at this point in time, I can tell you from reflecting, I wasn't ready for that. But I grew just for growth's sake. And we became, I went from one person, loan officer company. I had a 100-square-foot place off my back porch. That's what I was working to. Now I had an office. I had 14 loan officers, and we were doing millions of dollars worth of loans every month. So that went on 2004. If you know anything about the panhandle of Florida, that was hit with our worst hurricane here. It was Hurricane Ivan. It hit my area very, very hard and caused a housing shortage. It also caused a refinance boom. So as a lender, we got, not only were we in the middle of a good lending time with the economy, but we had a lending boom going on because of all the rehabilitation work that needed to be done to these properties destroyed from this hurricane. I went on, and in 2005, I was offered to purchase a company down in Central Florida. Now, the company had 14 offices, had over 100 loan officers. It was a culmination of a couple different companies. But all of a sudden, within an 18-month span of time, I'm sitting there with going from one person to now having multiple locations, multiple areas throughout the state, and multiple employees. We had loan officers. We had processors. We had underwriters. I was a correspondent lender, so I had lines of credit where I would lend at the table and sell it within a couple days or bundle it up and sell it. I had all of these things within an 18-month period. And I was obsessed with growth, but it was just growth for growth's sake. But things were good. Money was easy at that point. The loan officer world, it was some of our tests would put a mirror under your nose. If it fogged, you were approved. And I had people buying this paper left and right. Now, there were some loans out there that I did not do. I did not allow my staff to do, and I lost staff members because of it. Those option arms, I saw that they were built for self-employed, and there were a lot of people just using them for the people that had the same paycheck every 2 weeks or every month, and that's not what that product was built for. So I kind of saw that. And when that product came out in 2006, and we really looked at it, and I've seen a lot of it happening, I almost saw the writing on the wall. I avoided looking at it, though. My naivety of a market cycle had caused me not to even look at this. Instead, I just knew that, hey, things are going fine, money's easy, and oh, by the way, if something happens in the credit market for our A buyers, our FHA, our VA loan buyers, ever since the 70s, we've always had a subprime market. That's a market that people don't have the best of credit but still want to borrow money to buy homes. Now, they might increase their down payments, but we should still always be able to fall back on that. Well, as most of us now know, that's not the case. Subprimes were the first things that left. It was the first thing that dried up. I talk about in my book how I was sitting there one night. It was about 9 p.m. Now, I had a pretty strong adult drink in my hand as I was watching the news and watching the real estate market. This was in 2008, the beginning of 2008. I was sitting here watching the biggest depression since the Great Depression. And it just floored me. I was having to come up with a way now to walk over into the living room where my wife and children were and let them know that this house we're in, we can't afford anymore. We're gonna lose it. The lifestyle that we're used to, it's all going to be gone. It's not there. As I was thinking about that, I was kind of angry because I've always thought that real estate is supposed to be that rock-solid investment that avoids crashes. So why am I seeing real estate start to crash? I'm here to tell you that real estate is that solid investment that can avoid crashes. Now, I know here we are in 2014, and a lot of people would say, well, we just had a major, major crash. So why would you say that real estate is here and is a good, solid investment? I confidently say that because I now understand the difference between investing in real estate and trading in real estate. Now, I really go in depth on this in the book Transform. I actually have that chapter that talks a lot about this. But I had a friend that was still very, very happy and is still today very happy with his real estate portfolio. And I knew that he had just bought a property earlier in the year for about $100,000. And it's 3 years later, 3 years goes by. I called him up and said, hey, you know, I know that property's probably only worth $50,000 right now. How are you doing? Because I see him still on the social media sites and he seems to be still doing the same old, same old. I'm still buying properties. I'm still renting them out. I'm still trading properties. But I asked him about that. So we went to lunch and we had a good meeting, and it changed my perspective on real estate as an investment. Because I'll be honest, 2009, when I lost my home to foreclosure, I had to short sell two or three properties. I was really kind of worried about ever investing in real estate again. So now we have a real dilemma. I'm in real estate. This is what I do for a living. And now I'm worried about investing in real estate as a solid investment. And my friend made it very, very clear that I was looking at it wrong. Real estate is still a good investment if you are investing. And again, I go into this in my book, but let me just give you the criteria or the outline that we're looking at. He said that, Shane, most people, when they see investing in real estate, think about your popular television shows. HGTV's got that series all over the country called Flip This House, Flipping Out, Flipping Vegas, Flipping Milton, Flipping. I mean, there's flipping everything around here. And everybody thinks that's real estate investing. No, that's trading. That is trading, basing decisions solely on appreciation. And that's where he made my mind change. When I was first investing in real estate, I was just like the rest of the country. Real estate always goes up. So I was basing my decisions on appreciation. And he called me out on that. He said, you cannot base real estate investing, now make sure you get that key word there, investing, off of appreciation. That is real estate trading. There's nothing wrong with real estate trading. My friend and I still do it. Where I buy a house, I'll put some money into it and sell it for a profit. That's trading. It's no different than a stock guru going in, understanding that something's probably going to go up, and buying the stock, waiting for it to go up and selling it, or buying the option because they really do believe the stock's going to go up, you know, over the next 6 months or however long they want to put the option out there. Or in the stock market, you can even bet if it goes down. So you buy a put option instead of a call option. But that's trading. All they're doing is trading that stock. And all this investment is doing is trading this investment or real estate. So when you go to flip, you're just trading. You're not investing. Investing in real estate is when you take more of a long-term approach. So again, just like you would if you went to go in the stock market and look at your Pepsis and your Alcos and a few other stocks that pay really, really good dividends, and you're buying the stock for the dividend purpose, not for the appreciation, or get this, and this was the mind changer, ready? You don't care about the depreciation either. That's not why you bought it. You bought it for the cash flow. That's investing in real estate. That's investing in that stock. That's investing in whatever that stock market portfolio you're putting. If you're putting a portfolio together for cash flow, then you're investing. If you're putting it for appreciation in capital, that's probably trading. And when it comes to real estate, that is trading. He made this statement to me, and it stuck with me for years now. And anytime I have invested in a piece of real estate, this comes to mind. He said, whether a property goes up, it goes down, it doesn't matter. Appreciation is a bonus in real estate investing. Now, let me say that again. Appreciation of the property is a bonus in real estate investing, not the purpose behind real estate investing. And that really changed my criteria, because he broke down that property that he had paid $100,000 for, and it really was worth $50,000 now. So he had lost half the value. But he'd also made $48,000 in rental income. So he really didn't care. He said, I have no intentions of selling it, so why do I care? I've lost $50,000 in value, but I've made $48,000 in rental income. So my loss on this investment at this point, if I sold it, is $2,000. But I have no intentions of selling it. And guess what? Here we are in 2014. The property's raised in value some. The conversation when we had it was 2013. The property's raised probably about $65,000 now. So now he's back in the black. But he didn't care because appreciation and depreciation were secondary. He wasn't looking to do any of that. He was looking for an investment to provide cash flow only. And that's what I want to challenge you guys to do. When you start looking at real estate investing, look at the cash flow only. If the property cannot cash flow, look somewhere else. Let me say that again. If the property does not cash flow, look somewhere else. Now, I know that you're going to have some listeners. You're going to have some people that are arguing with me. Well, Shane, you're not counting in the depreciation value or, you know, the phantom depreciation that you get inside of real estate that the tax code allows you, and you're not counting all the write-offs that you get and the deductions you get. I don't care. You're right. I'm not counting all of that because, again, that's a bonus. I'm going to make real estate investing very, very simple, just like my friend did. He said, if you have to write a check every month to hold a property, it's not a good investment. Let me say it again. If you have to write a check every month, it's not a good investment. I know I'm going to get arguments on that. And feel free to. I want you to argue the point. But that's my philosophy now. When it comes to investing in real estate, if I have to write a check for it every month, it's not a good investment. I have to write a check initially, obviously, to acquire the asset. And sometimes you have to write the check. Other times you don't. We'll go into that in other episodes. But let's just say we have $20,000 that we have to put down on a $100,000 or $200,000 property. Okay, I've got to put the initial check down. But if every month, once I have a tenant in there, and it's leased out, it's rented out, if I'm having to write a check to hold that property every single month, that means I'm losing money. I'm not recapitalizing the depreciation. I'm not looking at the interest deduction. I want cash flow in my pocket. Now, does it have to be a lot? No. I have a townhome right now that I own that only generates me $70 a month. That's not very much, but it's $70 a month. So it does put money in my pocket. Now, the rent's gone up ever since I bought the unit and will continue to go up every year. So I plan on raising that. But right now, it's $70 a month. Now, I have other rental properties that pay me more than that. But that's not the point. The point is, does the property put money in your pocket? And if it does, then you need to evaluate the property further. Now, that's not just the only criteria when you go to look at investing in a property. It's not just the cash flow, but that's our start point. I want to make sure the project can cash flow before I start my due diligence, before I start any other research on the property. Because if it doesn't cash flow, I'm moving on to the next one. And it's just that simple. Now, I don't want to talk bad about people who trade real estate because I do that. I've got three projects I'm doing right now, trading real estate, flipping, if you will, rehab, resell, whatever you want to call it. I think there's a place for that in the real estate market. But investing in real estate is investing for cash flow only. Well, that's going to be the end of this very first episode. I hope you picked something out of that, and I hope you understand the difference between trading and investing. We're going to get into detail on each one of those in future episodes. If you want to get a copy of the chapter that I wrote for that book with Brian Tracy on Transform that talks more about how I evaluate this, how I evaluate for cash flow, what I take into consideration, visit the website realestatemoneyandmore.com/free-chapter. It's going to ask you for an email subscription. I hope you will. As soon as you subscribe, I'll go send you that for free. It's a PDF form. I'll send it to you automatically. I'll also let you know when future episodes of this podcast come available. Thank you so much. I hope you enjoy this as much as I do. We'll see you on the next episode.